Welcome to In the Drink, the show where we talk to some of the most interesting people in the beverage industry. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, owner and wine director of Fausto here in Park Slope, Brooklyn. I also make a little bit of wine under the label Annona. If you're a longtime listener, welcome back. And thanks so much for following us to this new feed. After 5 great years with Heritage Radio Network, I've decided to change things up a bit. We're self-producing now, and we'll still have the same great guests coming on the show to talk about wine and other delicious beverages. But now we're going to be recording each episode actually at my restaurant, Fausto. It's going to be in the wine cellar, so from time to time, you might hear some background noise. That's just people prepping for dinner service, so don't mind that. Another exciting update is we're going to start releasing the show in seasons instead of as they go live. This is great because we'll be able to bring you interviews with some of the most inspiring winemakers, distillers, other beverage professionals, but on a more regular schedule. Last but not least, I'm really excited to share that the first season of the new and improved In the Drink is going to be brought to you by Michter's Distillery. Michter's passion is making the finest whiskeys possible. Its cost be damned, tastes everything attitude is apparent in every sip of its smooth, rich whiskeys. So now let's get started. I'm extremely excited to bring you the first interview of the new season. Our very first episode today is going to be with Fabio Alessandria from GB Barolotto Winery in Barolo, in the northern part of Barolo. This is a classic winery, a historic estate, and one that we featured on our list here at Fausto Brooklyn since the day we opened. I've worked with these wines for more than 10 years at the various restaurants that I've been a part of. And today they've become very popular, very allocated, because the style of wine, I think at least, that the style of wine that they make, an elegant and pure representation of the wines of the northern part of Barolo, have come back in fashion. And people are appreciating the elegance, the nuance, the lack of high alcohol or intensity, but just pure, beautiful wines in a way that maybe they hadn't as much in the past. So I'm so excited to welcome Fabio here to Fausto today. Thank you so much for being our first guest on the new show.
Thank you to you to invite me.
It's an honor. So I mentioned that your estate is an historic estate.
Right.
I would love to hear the history.
The history of the of our cellar is very light to the history of Barolo, because of it seems that Barolo was born in 1860-1870, before the wine made in the era was called Nebbiolo. Sometime in the label there was wrote Nebbiolo plus the name of the village or plus the name of the vineyards. It happened with Canubi. You know there is this historical bottle of Canubi from the end of 1700. Nebbiolo, the name Nebbiolo, the name of the grape and the name of the vineyard, the location, the village, in the past was more important than Barolo. Barolo was born later in the history and was born in the, as I told you, it seems, in 1860-1870. And GB Barolotto, the company GB Barolotto, was born in the same moment, because GB Barolotto is my great-great-grandfather, and he started the company in middle of 1850. And it seems that he inherited the farm from his uncle Ignazio, that he didn't have any son, so he decided to leave the property to the nephew. And so we can say that really my great-great-grandfather was one of the pioneers of Barolo, was one of the first producers of Barolo.
How many estates from his time are still making wine today?
This is a good question. It seems that there will be soon a research about that, about the family, the historical family of Barolo. But I can tell you that for what I know, I think that we are the unique seller who didn't change name, who didn't change location, and the company stay in the same family. No? So there are some name older than us, but they changed property during the history, while GB Barolotto from him until today, it was always in our hands. Yeah.
And can you tell us about the Barolotto market and the Barolo market in the 19th century? I know that... Even he was receiving high accolades for his wines back then.
Yeah, my great-great-grandfather was, you know, he always believed in the quality of Barolo, no? And he gained many different prizes in different exhibitions, different tasting all around the world already. So he already understood that the quality was really important. And already was he understood the potential of the market, no? The potential of the marketing, I think. He already promoted Barolo around the world. And for that era was something unique, was something strange, because if you think that he gained prizes in different exhibition in Buenos Aires or in Paris or in Copenhagen or in Zurich, as he did, this was strange for the epoca, no? For the era. And the market, I think at that moment, for what we know, it was very light with the Italian country, and especially in the city like Torino, Milano, and Rome. These were the most important city for Barolo. But, you know, sometimes we find in the old book, old label, for example, we know that he was the supplier of Hotel Commercio in Milano, no? And we know that he did directly the shipment with the horses and with the, I don't know the name in English, the carrozza, no? In Italiano. So with the horses
and the carriage.
And the carriage, yeah. He went directly to the Hotel Commercio in Milano. He spent the night there. And the day after, he came back, you know, with the. So he was a precursor. He was a personality for that era. Yeah,
amazing. And his you said he passed it along to his nephew.
No, he inherited.
He inherited. He
probably was... inherited the farm from his uncle. Yeah, and he passed the property to the son, Francesco.
Your grandfather.
My great-grandfather, because GB was my great-great-grandfather. Francesco was my great-grandfather. After Francesco, my grandfather Ignazio, my mom Marina, and now me. Marina, of course, is, and also my father. My father is really important in the company, you know. They got married very young. And my father was a winemaker. He studied in the school of viticulture and enology in Alba, and he immediately helped my mother in the business.
And how old was your mother when she inherited the business?
We were not so lucky, you know. When you have an history so long, there are some moment, familiar moment, no. Not so special, and for example, that moment was not great for us because of the father of my mom, my grandfather Ignazio, died very young, 53 years old, with my mom that she was just 16, and she was the unique daughter. So was not a simple moment for the family, not a simple moment for the seller. But my mother was a really strong lady. And she finished the study, and immediately in Italy we say si è tirata sulle maniche. I don't know the right translation in English, but immediately understood the moment, and also she loved a lot the work. She loved a lot the wine. I really learned a lot from my mother. The cultural wine that is important. And very young, she was taking care about the activity, about the cellar.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's a nice history.
It really is. Do you think of different eras in the history of Barolotto? Were there different things that were done at different times that really signify this is the modern era of Barolotto, this is the middle era, this is the later era?
But, of course, in 160, 170 years, many things happened, no? So every person has a different personality, so different idea, different. But, you know, we always had... classic style of wine. For example, also me, when I started to work, when I started to help the family, sometimes with the new generation, there is some fight, there is some completely different point of view.
I've heard a lot of times that the new generation likes to make wine like the grandparents. They rebel against the parents.
Sometimes it happens, yeah. Sometimes it doesn't happen. But for example, you know, in Barolo, there are famous some history about family that completely changed the style of wine. They change everything. This never happened, honestly, in our family. Also with me and fortunately, me and my parents. Maybe also because my parents, they are young, no? Because they are 67 years old. I'm 45, so there is a generation, but the step is not so big. In general, we like the same style of wine. When we open bottle at home, the idea of the wine is not so different. So also for me, my work in the cellar was more to be more precise, to do more control, to control every detail in the process, than change completely everything. No, for example, the Barolo Monvigliero that is made with oak cluster. Our family never stopped to work with oak cluster. My grandfather worked with oak cluster. Just my father, for example, when he was in charge of the vinification in the cellar, it was 73, it was just graduated in the School of Viticulture and Enology. And he learned in the school that Nebbiolo should be destemmed. So when he started to work in the family, he started to destem. It was 73. But very soon, tasting the wine with my mom, with the old vintages, they know that the wine made with destemming the grape was really good, but was different than the wine made with old cluster. So they restart to try again with old cluster. No, you know. So also, if you come in the cellar, you see in our cellar the open vat tanks in oak, you see big cask of oak. So of course we experiment, because for me it's important to go on. It's important to try. But we have really clear in mind what our soil can offer us. And what we like. So we go on. We can do some change, of course. But not big change at the moment.
I think it's unique to see a winery that vinifies so many of their wines in open top oak fermenters. So many, especially for wines like the Barbera or Dolcetto, where many producers will make, for sure, put that in stainless steel. But you're not a big fan of stainless steel.
Not really. We, of course, we have some stainless steel that we use before going bottle for the blend, when we do the blend, the final blend, before to go in bottle. And we can use also in some moment of stress during the harvest, no? Because every harvest is different, so it happens sometimes that maybe Nebbiolo, Pelaverga, and Barbera, they ripe all together. Eh? And so we need space in the cellar, so we can utilize also some stainless steel. But when we can, we use the open top fermenter in oak, because we prefer. It's strange, but the wine seems different.
Was this the historic way for your estate? It's always been done with the open top fermenter.
Yeah. We still have one open top barrel that we don't use anymore, but we love to keep from GB Burlot.
Eh? Wow.
From the 8th of 1800, yeah.
And the whole cluster is also historic. Same. It's always been done that
same.
Way.
Same.
But
same.
Is it fair to say in the 70s, 80s, when people were trying to make Barolo that was a little bit more accessible and fruit forward and ready in the youth, it got rid of the stems because it made more tannic wines?
Yeah, it's clear when the first destemmer machine appeared in the market, it was normal for a winemaker to utilize, because, you know, the stemming, you eliminate a source of tanning, no? And you have to think that also in the 60s and the 70s, the tanning of Nebbiolo didn't ripe so well as today, no? So it was more easy to destem. But, you know, many people think to all cluster in order to create wine more bold and more tannic. But this, for me, is a bad idea. I think that... of course, if you use stems and you are aggressive during the skin contact, you push during the skin contact, you create bold wine, but for me, a little bit rustic too. If you think to the old cluster, you have to think to a wine more in the finesse, more in the elegance. And for me, the best example of old cluster are the wine more in the finesse, more in the elegance.
You mentioned that in the 60s, it was not as common to have fully ripe tannins as it is today, or not as easy. How much of that do you think is advances in grape growing, and how much is in climate change?
It's a mix. It's a mix. Both things are important. Of course, today, every producer is in Barolo is focusing on quality. There is no other way. And so sometimes we are, let me say, a little bit too much perfectionist in the vineyard, sometimes too much. And also the weather of today push the Nebbiolo to be a little bit more ripe. That is not too bad, because if you compare the Barolo made in the 60s and the 70s, in the 50s, of course, in the great vintage, they were really, really good. We are opening today bottle made in that era, and they are still great. They are still amazing. So the great Barolo were already done 50, 60, 70 years ago. What is different is that today, you know, today we still have two or three great vintages in a decade, as it was 50, 60, 70 years ago. But in the other vintage, we produce good wine. No? While in the past, the wine were amazing in the great vintage, while in the other vintage, so-and-so, because sometimes the wine were diluted, maybe green. You know, you have also to think that Nebbiolo ripe late in the season, no? And so the weather of the fall is very important. And many times it happened that just the rain destroyed the harvest before the picking of the grape. No?
How much of this do you think applies to the Barolo region in general, and how much just to your specific area? Because I get the sense that you being all the way up north in Verduno, it's particularly advantageous. Do you have a better chance of dealing with it getting a little bit warmer?
Oh, it's difficult to say.
Is it much cooler up where you are?
But,
than, say,
you know, we cannot say that Verduno is cooler than some other village. No? The altitude of Verduno is a mid-altitude, is 370 meters above sea level. It is the same of Castiglione Falletto, for example. There are some village higher than Verduno. Of course, La Mora and Monforte, they are higher than Verduno. I think that probably the wine of Verduno benefit about this change of weather, probably because also they gain a little bit more in... I think now they are more complete, because the wine of Verduno, they were always very elegant, very fresh. But sometimes they didn't have the same deepness of today. No? And today, with maybe a better work in the vineyard and the cellar, and with a little bit of change in the weather, the wine of Verduno, they are a little bit more complete. And also, honestly, the wine lover started to know Verduno recently, honestly, no? Because I think the 2010 was an important vintage, because with a single vineyard, the wine lover, the Barolo lover, start to understand really better the difference between the different villages, the different vineyard. And this, I think, was important for Verduno, because, you know, the history of Barolo is an history of blend, and many times the grape of Verduno were blended with the grapes of Serra Lunga Monforte to give the wine a little bit more finesse, more elegance. And I think that from the moment the producer decide to do to delimitate the area, to delimitate the crew, and to build the wine more in the terroir, the wine lover discover more and more Verduno.
Yeah, it's... So often Barolo and Burgundy get compared,
exactly.
But people don't realize that Burgundy has been, the different vineyard sites and different crews of Burgundy have been examined and written down since the medieval ages. But really, it wasn't until the 70s that we started to see the names of single vineyards on Barolo. And it's only recently that I think the general public starting to understand crews a little bit better.
Our history was different, no? The history of Barolo is an history of blend, and... So just recently, we are working in this way, in the way of the crew, in the way of the vineyard. Yeah.
I have one more global warming question, and then I would love to ask you about crews. Are you concerned that if it continues to go in the direction that it's been, maybe right now we're in a really good place for growing grapes in Exactly. Brittany, but one day it might get too warm. And is there anything that you or your fellow grape growers are doing?
This is the new challenge, no? This is the new challenge. I told you at the moment, we should be happy about this change because the medium quality of the wine in the area is better today than as it was in the past. For the future, we'll see. Of course, if the weather continue to grow, to continue to change in this direction, will be a problem for every region, no? Because the region with history, they chosen the grape because it was really the right grape for the soil and for the weather. No, of course, if the weather change, we have to change also something. No? What we are seeing also is that the vineyard that some years ago were considered just good because of not enough warm, now they are giving us amazing wine. No? So maybe also to reevaluate, you know, the Grand Cru, the soil of Grand Cru is something unique. So the wine that we can do in Monviglio or Canubi or in Brunate or in Cerequi or in Vignarionda, this is unique because of the taste of the wine is very light to the soil. But we are noting that also some other vineyard that in the past they are not considered great and now give us amazing wine.
Mm-hmm. And do you think the future is more education for consumers on the different crews or vineyard sites or a combination of both?
See, I think if I remember when I was a child, you know, for my parents, they loved the job, but they were not completely happy about the moment. No, I'm speaking about the late 70s, the beginning of 80s. My parents, they didn't have a lot of moral and also economical recognition, no? Because the market demanded just cheap wine, easygoing, fruity. You know, the Dolcetto was the wine more popular in the area, and the wine is more sold by every seller in the area. So I see today that is completely the opposite, no? All the wine lovers, they are very curious. They are pushing us every day to do something better, and they want to know everything. And so the world of Italian wine changed a lot in the last 30, 40 years.
When do you think did you first start to notice, or your parents first start to notice a big change? Because, I mean, now I get an offer for your wines and can only buy a few bottles at a time, even of Dolcetto.
But I was speaking in general in the area, not only about our cellar, no? I think if you speak with some other producer, they can tell you the same things, no? The 70s and the 80s were not to the decades amazing for a wine grower in terms of economic things, but also in terms of moral satisfaction, no? There was not this positive trend in the wine, no?
Did they consider leaving the winery and doing something else?
My parents.
Yes, moving to Torino.
No, I don't think so. Okay. No. My parents, they are 67 years old. They are still working a lot. To see my parents do another job, I think it's impossible. It's impossible.
You make beautiful Barolo. And it's the most famous wine of your estate. But lately, we've seen a big popularity for the Pellaverga, mm-hmm, here in New York especially.
Si.
Are you surprised to see how popular Pellaverga has become?
A little bit surprised, but very happy too. No? If you think that my grandfather in the middle of 1900 remained the only winemaker who produced a bunch of bottles of Pellaverga, and now Pellaverga is living a second life and is quite popular here in New York, as it is popular in Great Britain or in Japan or in Asia. It's a satisfaction, no? Because, you know, we saved a grape from the abandon, and now, you know, there is so great interest in this variety. We a little bit surprised, yes, but very happy too.
Does it give you some extra pride because the other grapes you grow, Nebbiolo, Barbera, Dolcetto, and they make a little bit of Sauvignon Blanc and Fresa, grow at other parts of the world, or other parts of Piemonte. But really, Pella Verga is just so unique to your area.
Yeah.
And so I imagine that must give you an extra level of pride that it's so popular now.
See, it was a grape always like to Verduno. We don't know exactly why nobody else in Barolo or in Monfort cultivated this grape. Mm-hmm. And this is the history. And now we have the DOC from the vintage 95. We have the DOC who limit the arrow production to the entire village of Verduno, plus a small part of Lamora and a small part of Roddy bordering the village of Verduno.
So it's fair to say in the 19th century, there were some other producers of Pella Verga, other people who were growing
it. It's true that the variety was cultivated in Verduno in majority, but there were some old plants, not a lot, but few plants of Pella Verga in Roddy and Lamora. And so when we did, especially in Roddy, but very few plants. So when we did the appellation, we included this part of Roddy and Lamora in the soil, in the arrow production.
And so was there some period of time, do you think, that GB Berlotto was the only bottler of Pella Verga?
The only bottler of Pella Verga, yeah, my grandfather in the 50s and the 60s. It seems that he was the unique one who continued the tradition to bottle Pella Verga pure. Also because at that time, the cellar in Verduno, there are very few. And many vine growers of Verduno that maybe they had, because you have to think that in the 60s and the 70s, there was not anymore a vineyard with pure Pella Verga. But there was a line of Pella Verga in the middle of a vineyard of Barbera, a few plants in a vineyard of Nebbiolo. And of course, my grandfather loved the grape. So every harvest, he picked the grape of Pella Verga separately than the other. And he made 600, 700 bottles of Pella Verga pure. But the other vine grower that sold the grape to other big seller, they harvested the grape with the altogether, no? Because of just few plants, or just maybe they had just two or three plants of Pella Verga in 1 mini-year of Pella Verga, so they added.
So probably we can all thank your grandfather for the Pella Verga being popular today.
Yeah, probably yes. We have to say thank you to him because probably if he never continued, if he didn't continue this tradition, maybe we lost the variety. But also a big thank you to my parents and also the other producer of Verduno that in the 70s altogether decided to select the best plant, to multiply the plants, create new vineyard, and this new project of Pella Verga altogether. No? And for Piedmontese people with a mentality very, you know, we are very, how we can say in English, our mentality is to work alone, no? To go on alone. No, we are not the mentality of the collective, no? So if you think that in the 70s, all the producers of Verduno were lie because of this grape and decide to do something altogether was really something unique, no? Something good for the village and good for them.
I love unique indigenous Italian grapes and stories of people really believing in them and trying to save them from becoming extinct. Can think of Foradori with Toraldigo or Mastro Berardino with Fiano. Are there any stories of indigenous grapes? Are there any unique Italian indigenous grapes that you really love that remind you maybe of your grandfather and the way he and your parents and the producers in the 70s, the way they championed Pella Verga? Now, not to say that Pella Verga is a big and popular grape, but it's highly regarded and people really love to drink it. Do you know of any other stories like that in Italy?
But in Piedmont, for example, the Rouquet.
The Rouquet.
It's another variety with a similar history of Pella Verga. The Nascetta.
Nascetta, yeah.
Nascetta is more similar to Pella Verga than Rouquet, because also Nascetta was very light to Novello Village, no? And now it's becoming more and more popular.
And that was Elvio Cogno, who was one of the first from Bruschetta. Yeah.
We can say that Elvio Cogno and our family, we had the same importance in the re-evaluation of these two varieties.
Oh, I love that. I've heard you speak about paying more attention to the vineyards. I know when you first started, you were more in the cellar and your father in the vineyards. And has that changed?
It's changing. It's changing. I don't know. I'm becoming older. And, you know, but it's quite common. When you finish the school, I think the majority of the winemakers are more attracted by the cellar. And slowly, with the age, I don't know, with the age or I don't know what, but, you know, while in the beginning of my work, I spent 90% of time in the cellar, but also because my father was always more like to the vineyard. You know, when he started to up the family, he told me immediately, I hope that you like the cellar because I go in the vineyard. No, so, and for me it was good because I love the wine. I love to taste the wine. I love to stay in the cellar. But in the recent year, I go more often in the vineyard, and I'm more and more attracted by vineyard. Yeah.
And what have you been doing in the vineyard? Is it continuing with the same work as your father, or have you tried to make some changes?
Of course, we continue in this way, but I think that before we have spoken about the change of the weather, no? And I think the work in the vineyard today have to pay attention to this change, no? So maybe we work in the same way. We work with Guyot, we work with our classic variety, but maybe we have to pay a little bit more attention to some work in the vineyard in time, in the moment of the work and how we do the work. So especially we really have to diversify the work in relation to the vineyard. It's important too. You have to think, for example, 17 and 2003, both vintage, very warm and dry, similar. It's true that in 17, the temperature went down during the night, while in 2003, night and day were really warm. No, while in 2017, the summer was warm during the day, but during the night, the temperature went down. But I think if you take 17 and if you take 2013, you really can understand what we learned in these 15 years.
And what were the changes that you made and what did you learn?
But, you know, many different small changes. Mm-hmm. But for example, how we treat the vineyard, how we treat the leaves, for example. No, we don't touch, especially in the south exposed vineyard like Monvillero, for example, we don't touch any more leaves.
We keep a bigger canopy
of
to course,
protect
a the big,
grapes. We protected a little bit more the grape. 15 years ago, we were more aggressive with the green harvest. Also because the concentration was slightly more important at the time. No, today, we still do the green harvest, but the idea of the green harvest today is different. We do the green harvest just to cut off the grape that cannot ripe. So it's just a technique that we use to uniform better the maturity in the vineyard than pushing the maturity. No? These are two examples in the cellar. The protection of the wine, the number of racking, all these kind of things, they have bigger importance in the wine.
And would you say you've moved towards using less treatments in the vineyards as well?
Less treatment, of course. If the weather is warm and dry, we have to spray less copper. Huh? This is clear. But, you know, at the moment, unfortunately, it doesn't exist a good viticulture without spraying something, no? So if we don't spray, we don't get through it. Eh? This is clear.
And do you keep it to spraying copper and sulfur?
Yeah, we do.
So you'd be considered an organic or biological estate?
See, we consider that. We are not. Our position is not so extreme, huh? But we are working every day more and more and more in this way. But honestly, in Piedmont, we were never also very extreme in the opposite way. So, of course, in the 60s and the 70s, the chemical was more present in the vineyard, but not as in the same intensity than other country. I remember I start to speak about the viticoltura integrata. I don't know the right translation in English. Viticoltura integrata is a kind of viticulture that try to use as less as possible chemical and you utilize more biological, more natural way. You know? I start to hear about that 30 years ago, 35 years ago, when I was a child.
And do you think that the use of organic viticulture is becoming more important today amongst your... I know for our consumers, we hear a lot. People like to drink organic wines. Have you found that your colleagues are also caring more about growing organically, even if they don't want to slap it on the label?
I think that in the era, we had a very positive reaction to this way. So all the producers, we are moving in this way, but slowly, slowly, and not just because the market is demanding us this wine, but because step by step, we want to change our vineyard. Step by step, we want to be as much as possible organic, but I think in a positive way. So in the way, there was not a big change just because the market demanded this kind of wine, but because slowly, slowly, we understand more about the different problem that we have and we try to resolve in the less invasive way.
I know you mentioned something I've been thinking a lot about is that a lot of times great winemakers, maybe they'll go to an enology school and then unlearn some of the things that they learned in enology. You said that happened with whole cluster at, historically at your winery. Did you go to enology school?
Yeah. I did the technical school and the university too, of viticulture and enology.
And you did university as well.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a big benefit to go to a school?
Really important, I think. Really important. You have to know the wine to work in a better way as possible. Also, if you want to be organic, you're in the cellar, in the vineyard, you really have to understand what is going on in the wine or in the vineyard to be close to the vineyard, but less invasive as possible. You know, if you don't do nothing for some time after you have to do something very aggressive in the wine. You know? In the past, the winemaker, the enology were considered like a doctor because of in the cellar, nobody was taking care about the wine. The wine was left in the barrel. And after 1 year, they tasted, there is something wrong. Okay, we call the winemaker. No, this is really the old idea. A winemaker of today have to really know what is going on in the wine. We have to be very close to the wine and less invasive as possible. But to be less invasive, we have to be close and we have to know what is going on.
That makes a lot of sense. One last question about wine style. Barolo Monviliero is such a beautiful and elegant wine, and it's now become something that's very cherished and popular. Do you find that people are appreciating nuance in wine as over power and strength?
Sí. It's clear. This is one of the reasons also because the wine of Verduno, they are more popular now than 30 years ago, especially in Barolo. 30 years ago, the trend was totally opposite. No, the wine lovers were more attracted by the power of Barolo. Mostly of time, they were attracted also by a style, a little bit more power, more intense, also with a good amount of folk. While today, probably because, they know more about Barolo. They understand also some other characteristic of this wine.
All right, Fabio, it's been such a pleasure to have you as our first guest here at Fausto. Thank you so much.
Thank you to you. It was very nice to talk about my family and my region and our wines.
Hopefully now I'll be able to buy a few more bottles of Barolo every year.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot.
So that's our show for today. Thanks so much for listening to In the Drink. Again, I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. You can follow me on Instagram at Joe Campanelli for updates on the show, photos of what I'm drinking, and even the occasional pit bull pick. In the Drink is produced by Jesmyn Molly. Huge thank you to Alyssa Sada for her help with promo for the show. And special thanks to Renny Lopez for our theme music. And last, but by no means least, thank you so much for listening. Join us next week for another episode of In the Drink.